You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Kyle Tucker's crushing the baseball right now. Kyle Driver yesterday's. Kyle Driver's left and right.
Are you Kyle Driver or King Tuck?
I like Kyle Driver more. You know what name I don't like? When they called him Ted. I hated that one.
Oh, I couldn't stand it. Because first of all, I didn't understand it. And then people told me it was because everybody was comparing him to Ted Williams. I'm like, that's so ludicrous. Especially with the start he got off to. Like, the fact that it still hung around and that people with a straight face could say it was just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Ted. I like the Kyle Driver whenever he hits a home run. But he's just been on fire as of late. He had that bad first month of the season. But May 1st through now, he's hitting .326, .386 on base, .603 slugging. If you look at it from May 1st through now, the only player in the American League with a better OPS is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 21 homers, 97 games, 11 stolen bases. Probably their best offensive player.
Oh, no question. I mean, I never saw it coming. But you know what? Today is the day of misconceptions when they listen with their other orifices instead of their ears. When people thought that I wanted to trade Kyle Tucker, and I said, absolutely, I never said that. I just said it's time for, whether you called him Ted or whatever you called him, call him on time for having a decent season for a change instead of, you know, just being underachieving. And the fact that he's lived up to that, stepped up to that. I mean, look, the bar wasn't set too high. You just got to be better than Josh Reddick. So, you know what? He found it, and now that he's found it, it hasn't left him. It's been fantastic to see that it took a while, but now we're here. And it's a great place to be. And that's what I like the most, is the fact that, you know what, and the other thing was, the kid, kind of like when we talk about Yordan, and we looked about like his kind of just kind of laissez-faire attitude towards going after fly balls and the way he goes about his business. He never showed much emotion, so you weren't sure it really bothered him that he wasn't performing up to what everybody expected of him. Now when he's doing this, the stretchy thing, and all the other guys are doing it, and he's having some fun. Last night when he hit the wall and he laughed about it and laughed it off, where he could have milked it and thought that he was really dinged up. And you know what? That's the Kyle Tucker that I've been waiting for. That's what I like to see. That's why when you look at him, and you're right, when you look at it from a numbers perspective, since I think like June 1st or middle of June 2, overall across the board, he's not only the best player on the Astros, he's one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah, even if you add in that bad April that he had, he still is, I think it was number 5 in OPS in the American League. He's turned into this really great hitter for the Houston Astros, an offense that is very good. And what's interesting about Kyle Tucker, you know, arguably the best offensive player on this team, 713-780-ESPN. If you disagree, and who is the best offensive player on this team, 713-780-3776, I'm with you. It is Kyle Tucker. What's baffling, though, if Kyle Tucker is your best offensive player, how come most nights when everybody's healthy, Kyle Tucker's batting third of your lineup? He bats in the seventh spot in the order more than any other spot this season for the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's a Dusty question, and that's something where Dusty plays his hunches, and Dusty's old school, and Dusty's going to Dusty. So I don't have an answer for you, because they said since Bregman got back, Tucker's been on fire even more. But Bregman's not protecting Kyle Tucker in the lineup. So it's an interesting question to ask, because you would think, just like Bregman has slowly but surely been moved up the line, and with every passing day that Bregman gets another multiple hit game or a big hit or a home run, Bregman has gotten all the way back to where he was before he got hurt. Why wouldn't you put Kyle Tucker higher? Unless you owe it to Correa, and because it's a contract year and Dusty's a loyal guy, Correa's got to be there. You know, you don't know. Thank goodness I was right about Altuve having bad August, but coming back in September, because he's been on fire and he helps. And I think if you look at the overall big picture, Altuve's the best offensive player in this lineup. But I think for what Tucker's, give him his due for what he's done for this season, when I've put it all on him in the past and said he's got to do better. He is, he has, and he continues to do so. That's fantastic. On that note too, by the way, can I just get this out there for your guys' opinions when we talk about what you think? Next time something happens good in an Astros game, can we be done with the academy thing? Wow, that was fun.
Too much
money.
That is
the weirdest thing in the world, that every time something positive has for the Astros, they flash, that was fun.
It was fun.
Can I just get Tuck Yeah? Can I get something better? Because that was fun is the corniest, weirdest way to celebrate the Astros doing something good. I don't know how that translates to even academy, but That was fun, flashing on the screen. I don't need.
That's a good idea. Like, you're not saying get rid of the academy. Yeah. Like, they should have it individualized for each player, right?
Yes.
Like, maybe you put Kyle Driver or Tuck Yeah or whatever the case may be. Whatever player, whatever cool catchphrase, like George Springer, Springer Dinger. I know he's gone now. Yeah, what?
Tuvin, like Groovin, if you get something for Altuve. I don't know.
Yeah, Kyle Driver's pretty good.
Okay, thanks. I mean, I'm a marketing guy. Sometimes you swing and miss. Sometimes you hit home run.
Yeah, just brainstorming. You know, putting you.
There's no bad ideas in brainstorming, Jeremy.
That's true. But if I'm Dusty Baker, and look, this is why I bang on Dusty Baker so much, and I know people get sick of
it. You get
it,
a lot out of that when you bang on him.
Maybe it makes me feel a little bit better.
Okay.
But I don't like when my managers and when my coaches. Whenever they stack bad decision on bad decision on bad decision. Look, this isn't like it's a luxury having most nights Kyle Tucker in the seventh spot, but it's not a good decision to have Kyle Tucker in the seventh spot over some guys you have batting ahead of him. And it's just my prevailing thought that the game has passed Dusty by and that he's so old school that he still does it his way where it's, you know, the new modern day of baseball where he's not necessarily optimizing each and every decision that he can optimize.
I don't know that it's passed him by. I mean, he's a lifer. And you can't argue with, he's a World Series champion as a player. You know, the only thing that's escaped him as a manager, and he still may get in as a manager, is the fact that he hasn't won a World Series. But, you know, he's coached a lot of really good baseball teams and coached a lot of really good baseball, no matter how much he's scrutinized for how he handles pitching and otherwise. But I think a lot is going to be dependent upon the postseason in terms of the future of Dusty Baker. I think that if he's truly squabbling with the front office, starting with James Click in terms of who plays and who doesn't, and he's going to be bullish, and he's going to dig in. The only thing that's going to dig him out is going to be a long playoff run, because otherwise, you mess with the bull, you get the horns at a certain point. And this is James Click's show. And if you're not willing to play his way, it's the highway. And I don't think there's going to be many other teams knocking on the door saying, hey, Dusty, we saw what you did in Houston. We want to give you. He thought he was already done. He got another chance. He did some great things while being here. But in order to be here for the future, you got to play nice with the management and the analytics department. And so far, he hasn't seemed to be willing to do that. So I think Dusty's entire future with this franchise and maybe his future for his career is all based on what and hinged on upon what happens in the postseason.
I think it's his last year no matter what. I'm hoping for his sake and Houston's sake.
If they win the World Series, he's back.
I think he retires, rides out in the sunset, and joins the front office as an advisor if they win it all. It's the exclamation point on a Hall of Fame managing career. It's the one thing that he hasn't done. He's not under contract. I think that James Click sees the writing on the wall that he wants his type of manager, and Dusty's not his type of manager. I think it's a perfect Cinderella, you know, fairy tale ending. He wins the World Series, rides it out, says I'm done. Hall of Fame career, joins the front office with Reggie Jackson.
If they win it, he's back.
Here was Ben Verlander yesterday on the Wheelhouse talking about how good this Astros offense is.
From top to bottom in that lineup, everybody is a threat in a different way. And, you know, a lot of people look at a guy like Yordan Alvarez and think he's this huge power hitter. He's really not. Yordan is such a good hitter, and he has obviously ridiculous power, but he is such a good pure hitter. And when you look from top to bottom of that lineup, they have so many of those guys. And that's why they're different than everybody else, because you have guys like Bregman and Brantley and Altuve that are going to give you great at-bats all the time. And from top to bottom in that lineup, that's what they do. So it's easier to be more consistent when you have guys that don't live and die by the long ball. And this lineup, so many guys in it are a threat in so many different ways. And they can beat you for a C&I single by putting the bat on the ball. And they can all hit the ball out of the yard. And I think it's just a special combination in that lineup.
And that's one reason Tucker bats seventh most nights whenever they're fully healthy. Because the guys in front of them are good. I just think Tucker's a little bit better.
That also is why you can afford to have the machete in the lineup every night. Because you don't absolutely have to have him or rely on him or need him like a lot of teams do with their catcher. Obviously, the Royals and Sal Perez is the greatest example.
He had another one today.
He did. And he's a guy that would be a sleeper for MVP. I heard the guys talking about it last night on the telecast. If not for the incredible seasons of Vlad Jr. and Shohei Ohtani, Sal Perez is doing some things that we haven't seen since Johnny Bench, and that's saying something at the catcher position, because the only other guys that hit like that other than Johnny Bench were Mike Piazza-type guys.
Yep.
So it's a rarity. But when you look at what this lineup brings and all the options Dusty has, That's the reason why it's you're able to have a guy like Machete in the lineup every night and it doesn't hurt you because you've got so much talent from 1 through 8.
Yeah, yeah, it's a really good lineup, and Ben Verlander joining the Wheelhouse yesterday describing that. Did you catch this yesterday in the Yankees game? The umpires threw out the grounds crew.
Somebody's out.
Go. An emphatic go.
Oh no.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, they're telling him to get lost. They're behind the tarp.
I've never seen the ground crew thrown out of a game.
Wow.
They were hanging out around the tarp because the rain started to come down, and I guess that the umpires didn't want them around the tarp. For maybe they were on the field, but also like the Yankees were pitching, and I guess they didn't want the psychological aspect of the tarp could be coming on at any moment. So the umpires ran the grounds crew. I've never seen that before.
I've seen some rare things. I told maybe I didn't tell you this. I know I told Nick. I was a part of the only time in NBA history that a broadcaster was thrown out of a game. My radio guy at the time in Portland, Mike Rice.
This happened to Dave South, too. He got thrown out of a Southwest Conference tournament game.
Is that right?
Yep.
So I was a part of that. I've never seen a groundskeeper get thrown out. That's interesting. Do we know who the umpiring crew is? Because, of course, the first thing that comes to mind is either Joe West
it wasn't,
or
It wasn't
Angel
Joe
Hernandez.
West or Angel Hernandez. I know that. It was your run-of-the-mill umpire.
Huh.
Yeah.
That is interesting. And by the way, did you also see the worst pitch in Major League history last night?
I missed that one.
Oh my goodness.
I saw the throw from shortstop that hit the umpire in the temple a couple of nights ago, but I missed the worst pitch.
Jake Brents of the Royals last night, and I don't know if he was trying to throw a changeup and something went horribly wrong. You talk about a guy that throws it 58 feet. That's the running joke of a play-by-play guy when he throws a breaking pitch and he doesn't get it over the, you know, he throws it into the ground. He threw it 4 feet. Right at the front of the mound, he jammed it right into the grass. Like, he threw it right down, straight down, like my daughter would do at softball practice. He just let it go, and it went, whoop, right straight down. It was his birthday. It was really a whole bunch of, like, oh, man, you feel for the guy. But, yeah, it was one of he actually bounced back from it to throw a scoreless inning. But if you go back and look, and I'll retweet it, the worst pitch I've ever seen.
Man, not good. White Sox, they're losing right now to the Angels 7-0. Good news if you want the Astros to have home field advantage in the ALDS. Coming up next, let's look at the AFC South. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Bradley Roby's getting set to play his first game in New Orleans. Of course, he was traded by the Houston Texans just before week one. Texans receiving a third-round pick in 2022, a conditional sixth-round pick in 2023. Roby had to serve the final game of his suspension in week one, so he didn't play for either team. He got announced to the New Orleans media yesterday. Do you still feel good about this trade from a Texans perspective? You clear off a little bit of money. You get out a guy that a lot of people didn't think was a great fit in the locker room. You get back a third, potentially a sixth.
Yeah, I'm fine with it from the draft pick perspective because, like I said, they're trying to stockpile as many opportunities to get good young players into this program that they can. I'm not as good with it when we found out how much money they're covering on the Roby deal. But since you're not so worried financially this year because of the fact that you're not trying to win a Super Bowl or get a playoff spot and spend a lot of money on free agents or otherwise, I'm good with it in the short term financially if it means long term you get more younger players in here. And you get a possible, and I hate to use the term, but I'll just say a detrimental player to the locker room, addition by subtraction. I'm good with it for that perspective more so than anything else.
I even like that the Texans are showing that they're going to spend a little bit of money on draft picks. I like the fact that instead of just saving it all, that the Texans are willing to go out and spend some of that money that they're saving in the Roby contract. I know they ate a bunch of it by using that to their advantage and perhaps getting a better round draft pick from the Saints than they might have gotten otherwise and then absorb that contract. So I like it in that sense. Bradley Roby's happy to be out of Houston. Introduced to the Saints media yesterday, and here's what he had to say about leaving Houston.
First reaction, I was happy, man. Like, as soon as I heard the Saints, I just thought about, like, all the guys I know here, guys I'm close with, I train with in the offseason, Mike Thomas, Marshawn, Alvin. You know, I'm kind of with those guys a lot in the offseason. So as soon as I heard that and heard the Saints, I was just like, man, what a blessing because, you know, we're playing for something here. And it's not that Houston's not playing for anything. It's just, you know, it's just different level right now, in my opinion. So just for me to be at this point in my career, you know, going to my eighth year, you know, I won a Super Bowl before, and I've just been trying to get another one, like, real bad. So as soon as I heard this, I was like, man, hell yeah, let's go.
He's happy to get out of Houston. The thing that caught my attention, playing for something here, and then you can kind of hear, he's like, oh, well, that didn't sound that great. I better try to be a pro here and say, oh, the Texans are playing for something too, just at a different level. But I mean, he's not wrong for saying that. The Saints, I mean, this is a team that could win the division. That's a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. Texans over-unders, 4 wins.
Think about an individual in any sport's goals in life in a team sport is, one, to make sure financially you get paid, and two, every opportunity you get to win, you capitalize on it. And if you're not winning, you want to be on a team that is, because you only get so many chances to try and get a ring and reach the pinnacle. I think that the interesting to me, because I think the same thing that stuck out to you stuck out to me. But the other thing that I would add to this is when you add his comments to the Randall Cobb comments, to the Shaq Lawson comments, everybody had to go back and do a little housekeeping after what they initially said, which was what they were initially feeling, which was, feels great to get out of Houston.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, the one thing that you're not going to be able to change the narrative on for the next couple of years is trying to win. Because you may be trying to win, that's great. But the end-all, be-all in that is if you achieve your goals. And for the next couple of years, you're probably not going to achieve those goals. So, again, the bigger thing that I'm looking at is, and I'm not sure how Cobb was in this regard, but I know from several different sources, and even Lance, I've heard Lance talk about this as well, that there were plenty of people that weren't disappointed to see Bradley Roby go because he wasn't exactly the consummate teammate or a guy that had team first.
Or maybe he was just rolling his eyes when Jack Easterby was high-fiving the guys while they were stretching at practice yesterday.
Maybe. Oh, but you know, a day removed from holding the game ball with the head of a light bulb shape, trying to be right in the thick of things when David Culley is addressing the team.
I really want to like David Culley, and then I see that stuff. Like,
but how much can he say, Jeremy? Right? These are the guys that gave him the job. It's the same way Caserio can't dump on him, because at the end of the day, we go back to this and look. Culley's got the job in part because of Easterby. So he can't say anything and say, hey, Jack, I don't want you that close to me when I'm talking to the team or I'm on the practice field. I don't want you that close to the players. So he feels obligated. Caserio has to feel obligated because we know, and we've highlighted over and over again, the fact that when the search firm came back with their results of who should be the next general manager of this team, Nick Caserio wasn't on the list. The only reason why Nick Caserio got the gig was because Jack Easterby got on Cal's plane and went and got him.
Cal, let's go get our man.
Because Jack Easterby knew it was going to save his ass in the process. But now, if you're Caserio, you can't poop all over Jack because Jack got you the gig.
Yeah, let's go get our man. Bradley Roby getting traded to the Saints, saying, and this is one other observation I had of this, and you brought up, like, when Shaq Lawson got traded to the Jets, when Randall Cobb got traded to Green Bay, now Bradley Roby getting traded to the Saints. They all say kind of the same thing, like, happy to be at a place, although Shaq Lawson, I'm not sure how much winning he's going to do in New York, but the other two, Cobb in Green Bay, Roby in New Orleans, they talk about how, happy to be traded here, playing for something, trying, you know, on a winning team. And you hear this narrative sometimes when the Texans traded Bradley Roby, this is them showing that they're a rebuilding team, that they're not worried about winning, that they're going to believe the process over the results. And like sometimes talk show hosts try to spin that narrative too. Every dude in that locker room, look, they're going to play hard. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to win for David Culley. Every dude in that locker room over there, they know the Texans process. They know that the Texans are in a rebuild. They want to prove them wrong. They probably feel that they can win 9-10 games, maybe sneak this division. I'm sure some of those players think that, and they have confidence in themselves. But I'm tired of hearing, like, on talk radio this is showing that the Texans are rebuilding. No, man. They've been rebuilding all offseason,
yes.
And it's apparent. And if somebody's trying to sell you that, just don't listen. Ignore that.
You
junk.
And I just absolutely chuckled to each other about the fact that people said this was the final straw that told you that the Texans are in full rebuild mode. No, the hell it is. They've been in full rebuild mode with every move they've made since Nick Caserio got the job and started to get control of this franchise. You saw all the players they let go. You saw all the moves had to be made to clear cap space to try and get them out of cap hell. You saw the fact that they knew that they didn't have draft picks. And they, you saw who their starting quarterback was going to be. So you saw everything you needed to know and more well before Bradley Roby was shipped out of town. And for the people that said, well, I didn't think that Jim, I've never heard of this about Bradley Roby. What rock have you been living under? You remember last year when he was suspended and left off a trip and basically told to stay home because of his actions? Because of the fact that time and time again, no matter who you listen to and who's talking that covers this Texans team, he hasn't been a guy that's been a team first kind of guy. And because he's already won a Super Bowl, he knows he doesn't want to be in a situation where he's going to lose. So he wanted out. So all these things are just mind-boggling to me. And some you get, you have to say it because of where you work and what you're supposed to do. But otherwise, if you're just a football guy and you're observing what's going on here, it should have been absolutely glaring to you like a neon sign on a daily basis. This team was rebuilding, and the process started when Caserio took the job.
You know who else says that they're rebuilding? Nick Caserio says they're rebuilding. Yes. When he says we're going to trust the process and not the results.
Yep.
The players flat out say it. The players say, look, we understand that there's outside noise, and we want to prove the doubters wrong. Who are the doubters? The doubters are the ones that are saying that they're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to win more than four games. They even know that the Texans are going through a rebuild. They just want to spoil the rebuild in year one.
Here's the other thing I'm going to add to what you said earlier, too, is the fact that they want to win for David Culley, but you know what else they want to win and play for? Themselves.
Their contracts. Yeah.
Yes, for all these guys on short-term cheap deals, whether they are here or somewhere else, they're fighting for their NFL lives, because when you look at all their track records, they were once highly touted, but now they're highly doubted. And so this, whether it turns out to be a playoff berth or a successful season or not for the team, this is make or break for them to continue to play football and follow and chase the dreams of the career that they want and they love.
And this isn't even a knock on the Texans, because I think you and I agree that the Texans should be in a rebuild. They should have pressed the hard reset on this organization, that they were such in a low spot, they hit rock bottom. And look, a lot of that was because of Bill O'Brien making lousy trade after lousy trade and lousy trade. And then also Cal McNair allowing it, and how much influence Jack Easterby had, how much you want to believe of that. It all played a role in it. Nick Caserio is here to be the savior of the franchise. I hope that they give him a fair shake to save the franchise. I think that they are.
I think
it's the right thing to do. I'll give him a fair shake. I said he won his last trade. I think he won this Roby trade from a Texans point of view.
Baby steps.
But you have to understand that it's a rebuild. And anybody who's telling you that it's not a rebuild is flat out lying to you. This isn't a knock on the Texans. I like what they're doing. I haven't loved all of the Caserio's moves, but I like the rebuild. I like the reset. I'm willing to give it a chance. I like David Culley. But anybody who's telling you that this isn't a rebuild, anybody who's saying that this Bradley Roby trade was the last straw to prove that it's not a rebuild, you're getting flat out lied to.
Attaboy, I like the way you just aired it out. That's great. Here's the other thing, though, that worries me, Jeremy, because we can talk about the general manager. We can talk about the head coach. We can talk the direction of the franchise. The direction of the franchise and everything that goes with it is controlled by the guy that's on the top. Those are the questions that I would really love to have answered. Like, did you have input on the Hopkins trade, and did you approve it?
Yeah, but I mean, I would love that answer, too. You're never going to get it.
Right, but okay, but let me finish, because the other thing is this goes further. We talk about, hey, you know what? We like the good guys. We like the fact that I like this guy. I like that guy. Cal likes Jack Easterby. That's a problem, too, because the only reason why Jack Easterby is still with this franchise is because Cal likes him, because they go to brunch and they go to church and they hang out and he likes his positive attitude. But does that positive attitude translate to positive results on the football side? If the answer is no, if the answer is that it's more of a negative than a positive in terms of perception, reality, and everything to go with it from what you said and what we've witnessed for how close he is to this team on a daily basis, I need someone that's going to be able to say he needs to go and feel confident in it. And I need an ownership. It doesn't have to be Mark Cuban or Daniel Snyder or guys that are hyper-involved in their teams. It needs to be a guy that knows from a business sense, from a reality sense, from a practical sense, what's right, what's wrong, what I need to change.
The scary part of that, if you're a Texans fan, though, is it seems like that ship has sailed. And look, this is why it bothers me when Jack Easterby is in the middle of the locker room holding one of the game balls. This is why it bothers me when Jack Easterby is running down the stretch line high-fiving guys and patting guys in the behind. And I know what you're saying. Well, you're reading way too much into that. You're nitpicking. Why are you looking at that? It's because I had hope that Jack Easterby and Cal McNair would eliminate themselves from the equation, because that's the only way this
Jack
will
can't.
Work. That's the only way that this rebuild will work is if Cal McNair disappears, Jack Easterby just goes to brunch. Just don't go on the
he
football
can't,
field.
Brother.
Just
he
don't
can't.
Be in the locker room. That's all I ask.
He cannot remove himself, because this is why he's in it.
That's why I don't believe that the rebuild's going to work, and it's why I don't think that they are giving Nick Caserio a realistic chance to turn this thing around.
Cal can do it, because all you got to do is get next on a video game, and you can take Cal into the equation all you want. You can take him, and everybody's making a big deal about him being in the suite and his wife sleeping, and what is he? You don't need him to do anything anything other than stay out of the way. But you don't need Jack Easterby to get in the way. That's the thing that I'm concerned about because of all the negativity, because of the fact that he's had way too much power and control, because he picked your general manager and your search firm didn't, but you paid them six figures. These are issues. These are problems. This is why I don't like Jack Easterby. And the fact that I thought he was hidden away and then everybody started saying, oh, he's there. But, and I've talked internally and externally to people around this franchise that say there's actually some truth to it. If you go and report and start showing videos and of Jack Easterby, look out now because they'll pull your credentials. They'll have a talking to. They'll do some things because that's their guy. That's a scary proposition to me because Nick Caserio needs to be the guy and only guy. Nick Caserio I'd feel comfortable with having Bill O'Brien type control. Bill O'Brien was a loose cannon that obviously scared me in the every single time he got any kind of personnel decision on his mind. But the fact that now it's not just Nick Caserio and there's another loose cannon involved, that scares me with Jack Easterby.
They're in the sunken place, too, because we had Farrell Brown the other day. He's defending Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're in the sunken place, all 53 of those dudes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Jack Easterby, still a problem in this organization? Coming up next, Kyle Tucker's Torching the Baseball. It's next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, I've got a couple of people on the text line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, asking how those broadcasters got thrown out of games. I've heard this secondhand about Dave South, that it was a Southwest Conference tournament game. Official made a bad call, or he thought it was a bad call late in the game. It was a close game, and he gave the choking gesture to the official. Official ran him, ejected him. Dave South to this day says he was buttoning up his tie, or like fixing his tie. Believe that if you will. Dave South, you're listening. 713-780-ESPN.
Dave South with the Texas Aggies.
The fighting Texas Aggies.
I met
Aggies.
Dave South once. I couldn't believe his jeans were as tight, and then he rode a Harley.
Good guy, by the way.
Very nice guy.
Very nice guy. But it was like the next guy that was supposed to do like the next game of the Southwest Conference tournament, he just like took the seat and called the rest of the game for Dave South. Yeah,
because convenient to have a guy waiting in the wings. My story,
was in the
not
tournament.
So lucky. So Eddie Doucette, Hall of Fame broadcaster, I grew up listening to in Milwaukee, ends up being our play-by-play guy on radio in Portland. Mike Rice, ex-college coach, is my analyst. They're in Indiana. And Steve Javy, now referee extraordinaire expert for ESPN, was one of the most hated referees that much in the mold of all the other guys that want to be bigger than the game themselves, like Joey Crawford and others. Steve Javy had a reputation. So bad call in Indiana. Uncle Cliffy, rest in peace, Cliff Robinson, gets really, really hosed on a call. And during the timeout, my radio guys are butted up against the Blazers bench. So Cliffy comes back around and starts talking to Mike Rice during the timeout about what a horrific call it was. And Mike is, as an ex-coach, adamantly talking to Cliffy, but he's talking to Cliffy. Javy comes over and gets close enough that he could get wind of the conversation, and he points at Mike Rice and he goes, "You sit back down and do your piddly little job and shut the bleep up." And Mike Rice was like, "I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Cliff. And instead he was like, "You heard what I told you to do." And Ricey was not having it. And he kept talking to Cliff. And Steve Javy blew his whistle and said, "That's it. You're gone."
I think it's a good ejection.
Eddie Doucette had laryngitis.
Oh, no.
At that point, I wasn't traveling in Portland because I was the assistant director of broadcasting. And our director of broadcasting was a lady named Sylvia Christensen who had no desire to. I was in charge of the broadcast on game nights. And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, my God, if Eddie's voice goes, we got nobody." Like, nobody, because it's not a home game. And so you could hear his voice with every call in the fourth quarter weakening. But everybody after the game was talking about Mike. It was, like, legendary that he was the first broadcaster in the history of the NBA to get tossed. And to this day, Rice, he'll tell you, "I wasn't talking to him. I was talking to Cliff. He had no business throwing me out." But that's how referees go.
As soon as the ref tells you that if you don't stop it, they're going to run you, you should probably stop it. Because, I mean, they're not throwing, like, they're branding the weapon, they're going to use it.
But Rice wasn't wrong. Because
yeah.
Because Javy, at a certain point, was rabbit earing. He was listening where he didn't belong. And if Rice was pointing at him, now there's also stories that I have over the years with Gene and Jim, Gene Peterson and Jim Foley. And there were times when official, you know, Gino deserved it because we know the legendary calls when they didn't start the clock in Utah.
That one was brutal.
Yeah, oh, there was one. We used to have a reel, and when we changed stations, it was almost like the ultimate F you.
They didn't start the clock.
They destroyed our reel when we had all those great calls.
Oh, no.
But there were times when the officials would come over and basically tell Gene, shut the... Worrell was close one night, too, where, you know, Worrell was like, he would pretend his headset was still on.
Yeah.
So that he would think he was talking to the truck, but he'd be so loud the officials could hear it before they moved him upstairs and be like, yeah, that was the worst call in the blah, 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 blah. And you could see the officials' eyes just dial in on him. But thankfully, none of them ever got tossed. But yeah, Mike Rice was the first broadcaster in NBA history to get tossed.
I've made friends with one official, TV Teddy.
Oh,
TV
really?
Teddy Valentine. He's like the nicest guy. I know he's like the most scrutinized official out there.
Well, because he deserves it.
Because he knows Elvin. He knows Elvin, okay. So he comes and talks to us before the games. Like, he couldn't be like a better dude. And he does deserve, like, his on-court antics sometimes questionable, but good dude. He'll come talk to us every time we have one of his games. Didn't Steve Javvy and Clyde Drexler have a history? Didn't they absolutely hate each other?
So the best way I can say that is, well, Jake O'Donnell was the first one. And if you remember, Jake O'Donnell tossed Clyde in a playoff game, and Jake O'Donnell never refed another NBA game because they knew that Jake was wrong. In the case of Javvy and Clyde, it was very similar to Chris Paul and Scott Foster. It got to the point where, and this was before analytics started charting every call referees made and records when refs were reffing games, the whole league just absolutely loathed and feared that Steve Javvy would call your game.
Yep.
But if he did, he had certain targets. Clyde was definitely one of his targets.
Yeah, I heard that those two did not get along at all. Looking at the AFC South, Texans are in first place all by themselves. They're 1-0, all the other three teams 0-1. Texans top of the table in the AFC South. Have you noticed that every AFC South team this weekend is underdogs in their games? Colts, they're 3.5-point dogs home for the Rams. You look around, Jacksonville at home, which I don't hate this line, by the way. Jacksonville +6, home for Denver. And then the other team in the league, Tennessee's headed to Seattle. They're 6-point dogs as well. Week two, we're talking next week. Texans still all alone at the top of the division by themselves in first place?
No, because the Texans could lose to the Browns.
But still, they're 1-1. The other three teams lose.
Yeah. No, I think so. Yeah, I think that. No, then from that regard, yeah. I'll tell you what, a game I would love to watch every minute of, and I probably will, is that Tennessee-Seattle game should be a fantastic game. If, in fact, you believe Tennessee just had a bad first week and that Tannehill can figure it out, the offensive coordinator can finally figure out Derrick Henry's the answer, not a question mark, and see what Julio Jones has. But I love that matchup, and I think Tennessee's going to give Seattle one hell of a game. Denver's going to beat Jacksonville. I don't know if they're going to cover, but I think they're going to win. Jacksonville doesn't impress me at all. And look, Daryl Bevel's play calling was atrocious.
It was bad. I don't know why they didn't run the ball.
You got a young running back that proved last year, whether he was drafted or undrafted, the kid can play, and he carried the ball about 4 or 5 times. That's inexcusable, especially trying to balance out and protect a young quarterback.
See, I think he was trying to showcase Trevor Lawrence more than he was being effective offensively.
Well, but you're not a marketing machine. You know right. What you are? You're an offensive coordinator. So, I mean, I think Denver I think Denver will win that game. I think the Texans will be at least tied for the lead in the division after next week.
Well, they have to be at least tied for the division.
So I think they will. I don't think they'll be alone.
Texans injury report, Farrell Brown tripped on his staircase before he was talking to us. He's on the injury report, ankle
before,
shoulder
after.
Injury.
I mean, probably he was, after. He probably wanted that internship so badly that he thought he could take some time off.
He was running to fill out his application.
Yeah.
Desmond King did not practice yesterday. Kevin Pierre-Louis did not practice. Andre Roberts did not practice. Deshaun Watson. Did not
Shocker.
Practice.
I need
not
Desmond injury related King to play.
Anthony Miller, though, by the way, expected back this week. Does he see more snaps than Danny Amendola? I hope so. You got to give the young guy more snaps than Danny.
Well, he's
Amendola.
Got more of an upside, right? He's the guy that could factor into your future if he can show that he can stay healthy and perform. And the other question that I would have in that regard, especially since we've talked so many times about his shoulder, when does he get that thing surgically repaired? Because that's going to be a big factor in wherever he signs and wherever he goes after this season, too, because he's got to be able to have, you know, longevity health-wise. And injuries are such a big factor in the NFL. Multiple times on the same shoulder, at some point you got to get that thing tightened up and fixed. Yeah. I like what Amendola was able to do because it surprised me. I didn't think they'd get any return on that investment right away. But of the two, you would hope that, you know, Amendola is just kind of like a security blanket insurance piece.
Bad news for San Francisco. Linebacker Dre Greenlaw is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks having surgery to repair a core muscle. So bad news for San Francisco, bad news for Dre Greenlaw. You know who else is bad news for? Framber Valdez has been scratched from his start tonight. Why and what it means next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Framber Valdez has been scratched from his start tonight, suffering a small cut on his left hand yesterday. Don't know how he did it. Don't know where he did it. Don't know how long he's going to be gone. Luis Garcia bumped up. He's starting tonight for the Astros instead, so you're not getting like a mop-up situation. Luis Garcia is still going, but hey, this is not ideal news. 17 games before the end of the regular season, and one of your top starting pitchers is being scratched from a start hours before the game.
You think he did it on the straw of whatever that concoction he was drinking late in the game last night?
What was that, by the way?
I hope it was a smoothie and not like a Brandy Manhattan, but I was looking at it when he was conversing with Garcia and some of the guys on the bench, and I'm going, that's not coffee. That's not Gatorade.
He's drinking
a straw. The hell's he doing?
It looked like he went through a 7-Eleven and got a fountain drink.
Now, you think, from my experience being around basketball, it wouldn't be the biggest surprise in the world if there was beer in a cup in the NBA for a player in street clothes. But he was in uniform. We knew he wasn't going to pitch. And I'm going, I can understand the coffee aspect. I don't understand what the hell. If you're going to have a smoothie, have it before the game in the clubhouse.
I don't think Framber misses too many meals. I think it was a soda. Ooh. I think it was a soda.
That fat joke?
Yeah, was that kind of, like it was a fat joke.
Not a fat joke. He's just a big man. Like, he's sturdy.
He is a very linebacker-esque pitcher.
Yeah. Jake Asman with us, by the way, from the Wheelhouse. He'll be on later from 3 to 7.
Hello,
not
guys.
Much later.
Yeah, like 12 minutes from now. Yeah. I mean, we have no time for commercials. I mean, we get you more content than any station in this town. It's like 3 minutes.
And we pay the price for that.
We do. I let me tell everyone listening, let's lift the curtain a little bit. The most stressful part of my day is the 3 minutes from when you guys end your show and then me, Cody, and BK have to run into the studio, get everything set up, get the Twitch going, and we have to do it in under 3 minutes because it is tight to get everything rolling and get set for the, you know, the changeover, as they say in radio.
Cody and BK have it worse than you, though.
They do. You're very good about it. You get up quick. You know, you make sure you clean the area.
I actually clean my area and ask if they want me to actually spray it down and Clorox it.
We all do that.
Yeah, but I'm like, I try to pre-pack so that it is painless for everybody because it is a tight window.
Here's where you get screwed with this, Joel, is that you can't take your charger out because your computer doesn't keep a charge. So that takes a little bit longer time. I make sure to get mine out the previous segment. But this Framber news, not great. Not great, Jake. What do you make of it?
Not good. I mean, you said it best, right? This is not what you want. There's not a lot of days left in the regular season, so you hope you can make it back. And look, this team, the one thing they do have is depth at the pitching, you know, inside the pitching staff, but they don't have an ace. Like, we've talked about that. Yeah. All season. So, you know, Framber's one of those guys you're relying on to be 2020 Framber come playoff time. And you just have a lot of question marks with this team. Even like Lance McCullers, he's been great. You know, we had Ben Verlander on yesterday. He thinks, no doubt, he's the game one starter. I agree. But Lance is a guy that throws a lot of pitches. Like, would it be shocking if he labors and can only get you through 5 in a playoff start? Like, you want your ace to go 7-8. I don't know if they have that guy on this team right now. I don't think they do.
7 or 8, I think, is out of the equation no matter who you go to.
There's one guy who can do it.
McCullers.
Jose Urquidy.
I think McCullers can do it. McCullers can get to 7 because McCullers' biggest enemy is himself. When he gets into that one inning in the first or second when he throws 25, 30 pitches, that's his bugaboo detriment. If he can avoid that, he's got the stuff and he's got the strength in his arm that he can do it. Urquidy, I'm not sure that I want him to do it,
right?
But I think last night Urquidy solidified himself as, look, you got to ride this horse until he shows you the third shoulder injury is around the corner.
Agreed. And you can't give me the, oh, well, you know, Greinke was bad against the Rangers, but then when Urquidy pitches well against the Rangers, oh, it's the Rangers. Like, then why was Greinke so bad against the Rangers? So it was encouraging last night. You put it in perspective. We'll probably get another 2 starts here before the end of the season. But, yeah, I mean, You want him to pitch himself into the rotation. Last night was a big step forward for that.
Jay came in here and said he's going to take me to task on the air about my angst for Dusty Baker. Do you want to address it now, or do you want to wait to your bit later?
I'll get into it right now. I'll save some for the air. But yes, basically, please. This team, despite all the injuries, despite losing so many key guys in free agency, is on pace to win 96 games. They're going to go to the playoffs. This is the best era of Astros baseball in the history of the franchise. Lay off my guy Dusty. Overall, he's done a good job.
Lay off my guy Jeremy.
Jake, you could win 95 games managing that team.
I don't know if I could.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I could.
I have zero doubt that you could.
Dusty does a solid job. I'm not sitting here telling you that, he's, Lou Piniella, or I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's, prime Tony La Russa.
Why'd you have to pick a Yank?
I picked a Mariner manager.
Okay.
When he won 160 games. Right.
I know him best for his time in Tampa.
Sweet Lou?
Oh, boy.
What
good
do you
for
guys,
you then,
what do you
but
guys,
I don't know what the hell you're watching.
Other than bashing my angst for Dusty, what do you have coming up on the wheelhouse tonight?
We got Chris Mortensen joining us at 4:30. Yeah, nice. We'll talk some NFL with him, get the latest on everything going on around the league with Mort. Look, I've never had him on before in any of my shows, so always been a huge fan. Can't wait to get him on. We got Lee Sterling, our handicap guru, at 5 o'clock, giving out some picks for the upcoming weekend of college and NFL football. And we're going to talk to Adam Archuleta at 5:30 today.
That's Ram.
Ex-Ramble, he's also calling Texans-Browns for CBS on Sunday, and he was in the booth last Sunday at NRG calling the Texans win over the Jags. So good guess, a lot of Astros.
So he's the A-team, right? He would be the biggest guest you've gotten so far on the wheelhouse?
Archuleta?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Top five secondary player in NFL history?
You got to make a case. Who's number one?
I mean,
John Lynch?
I'm partial to Pat Tillman, but there's a little bias there.
I thought you were going to go John Lynch.
John Lynch is a good one.
Hall of Famer?
I mean, you
brought racism into our shows. Good job. Got to go white, huh?
Yeah.
That's your thing?
He's a white guy, so, yeah.
I don't know why we got to do those kind of things.
He's calling the game. Can't wait to get his thoughts.
I understand why you're doing what you're doing. Yeah. I don't understand what he's doing. I was ready to beat your ass because you're coming at my guy about Dusty, but now I can't stick up for him because he just went completely white.
I think when you think of Adam Archuleta, when you think of Adam Archuleta, it's one of the first things you think of.
Andrew, our producer, thought of the singer David Archuleta, who I guess was on American Idol. Yeah. I don't know.
No clue.
I had no idea either.
That's a weird pull there by
other
Andrew
than like
Carlson.
What was it, Kelly Clarkson, other than that, and Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, Chris Daughtry, another American Idol guy.
I didn't know that.
But just to answer your question, Jeremy, he is not a top five white defensive back.
Yeah, I was just saying because I know he's white and played in the secondary.
It's not close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know he's not close.
Always making things racist around here, Jeremy.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I can't stick up for my guy after that.
It's what you think of when you think of Adam Archuleta. We'll be listening, Jake. Thanks so much for stopping in. The big game tonight, the only big game tonight in the NFL, the New York Football Giants, the Washington Football Team, 3.5, Washington's favorite. It opened at 5.5, by the way. It'd be wise if you got it when it opened. Taylor Heinicke gets the start for Washington. There was this caller who called in to B. Mitch and Finley that has quite the theory on how the injury to Ryan Fitzpatrick actually happened. He said that he got hurt on a water slide. He said that he was on a water slide in a water park near a Washington area, and that he was going down the fast slide, and he banged his hip on the fast slide, and he said this guy worked there, the caller to B. Mitch and Finley,
yeah.
And he said he was like walking weird the rest of the day. He went down, he took a seat. He said that's how Ryan Fitzpatrick got hurt.
That's why we talk about like the 24 hour news cycle became 24 seconds. It's because everybody's a reporter.
I know.
And now whether this guy didn't even need a phone to be able to be the eyewitness that saw this. I got to believe there's some truth to it, right? I don't know if that's, led to the injury, was the injury. But here's how it sounded when the call came in.
What's up, man? You're on with B. Mitch and Finley.
I'm pretty sure Ryan Fitzpatrick re-injured his hip during the game against the Chargers. Where you guys saw round two, we saw round one at Symington Water Park in Leesburg at Ida Lee on the last day. Because three times a week, he'd bring all of his 7 million boys up there. They'd go on the slow slide. He always go on the fast slide. And then about mid-afternoon, it looked like he whacked his hip on the fast slide, and then he didn't do no slide the rest of the day. Everybody at the park saw he was going around either like a awkward gait or a shuffle walk the rest of the afternoon, and he parked it in his chair. I think he re-aggravated it during that game.
There you have it. Ryan Fitzpatrick, actually how he got hurt on the water slide. He didn't injure it in that game. He re-injured
it. That's Fitztrack.
We saw round one at the water park.
What kind of dumbass? I understand it's like Jeff Kent going dirt bike riding when you got baseball seasons to worry about. Ryan Fitzpatrick. First of all, I guess I'm so disconnected from water parks. I didn't know there was the fast slide and the slow slides. But why is Ryan Fitzpatrick riding any slides when you've got a season to worry about where you might have your last real opportunity to be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
I wouldn't think twice about riding a water slide. I mean, you don't think you're going to get hurt on a water slide.
Stranger things have happened.
There's been some pretty bad ones, actually, yeah. Now that I think about it, that I don't want to mention
on
air.
See how it feels like to go down your stairs at the house.
That's how he got hurt, John Wall?
The second one. That's how he tore the Achilles.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Ugh. So anyways, that's how Fitzpatrick apparently got hurt, at least to that caller. Who are you taking tonight? Washington, home for New York. That line shrunk. Started at 5.5 for Washington. I got it there. It's 3.5 now.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm a Tyler Heinicke believer, but I'm not a believer in the Giants' offensive line. I'm certainly a believer in the Redskins' defense. I'm sorry, I said the word. The Washington football team's defense.
I think
I got the Washington football team.
Money in the fine jar. I think Washington wins outright. I feel good at my 5.5, although it's down to 3.5. Just saying. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Dell for doing all the hard work. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before the Wheelhouse, let's talk about the fact that there's a game to call tonight and that not only are the people broadcasting it on national TV on NFL Network, but you can call it by making a bet on it at mybookie.ag. That's right. Mybookie.ag, the only place you should place bets. And if you're a new customer, if you're an existing customer or used to be a customer, if you put some money in your account right now and you put the promo code BET975 in at mybookie.ag, they're going to double your first deposit or your next deposit up to $1,000. That's right. Put that code in. And if you put 100 in, you're going to get 200 in your account. That means more money in your account, more games to play, more chances to win. That's the way they do it at MyBookie. You know what else they do? They pay when you win. They're not going to hem and haw and trying to get you to reinvest. If you win and you want your money, they're going to send it to you because that's how they take care of their customers and make sure you come back. From your phone to your laptop to your tablet, if you want to place a bet, it's so easy, it's so fun, and there's only one place to do it, MyBookie.ag. That extra money credited to your account initially just for using that promo code BET975. So get to MyBookie.ag right now. Sign up or sign in, put in the promo code BET975, and reap the benefits of hearing what you're hearing right now on ESPN 97.5. Rollover rules apply to your bonus deposit. See website for details. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. Take my word for it. Bet at mybookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.